Now, a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Letters etched into the sign read, Turner. Now, in black and white, a shield appears with the letters WB and the inscription Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated presents. As an ocean tide recedes from shore, rippling titles appear. Joan Crawford as Mildred Pierce, Jack Carson as Wally Fay, and Zachary Scott as Monty Berrigan. The tide returns, washing the titles away. Another title ripples into view, Mildred Pierce, with Eve Arden, Anne Blythe, Bruce Bennett, Lee Patrick, Maroni Olson, Vita Ann Borg, and Joanne Marlowe. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Brian Gould and Robin Sitton. Descriptions read by Chloe Lehman. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free at 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. Titles continue. Screenplay by Ronald McDougall. Based on the novel by James M. Cain. Orchestral arrangements by Hugo Friedhofer. Musical director Leo F. Forbstein. Music by Max Steiner. Produced by Jerry Wald. Directed by Michael Curtiz. Now at a beachfront cottage, a car's headlights shine. Inside, a mustached man clutches his chest. As he falls to the floor, the unseen shooter tosses down a revolver beside him.
Mildred?
On the opposite side of the room, a bullet hole chips a wall-sized mirror. A spiral staircase overlooks the living room, where firelight flickers over the man's fallen body. Outside, the car pulls away. Soaked Santa Monica Pier, between a waterfront bar and a seafood shack, a woman walks alone through heavy mist. In a broad-shouldered fur jacket and fur-trimmed hat, she walks the length of the pier with her eyes fixed on the wooden planks beneath her. She moves with heavy steps and ankle-strapped high heels. As her face enters the light, she chokes back a sob. She's middle-aged, with high cheekbones and a darkly painted mouth. 20 feet below, water splashes the pier's thick pilings. Pausing against a metal railing, she looks over the churning surf below. A beat cop notices her and stops a few feet away. The woman glances down and swallows hard, then steps up to the railing. She jerks her hands away and steps down quickly. The cop shines his flashlight at her as he approaches.
What's on your mind, lady? You know what I think? I think maybe you had an idea you'd take a swim. That's what I think.
Leave me alone.
If you take a swim, I'd have to take a swim. Is that fair? Just because you feel like bumping yourself off, I gotta get pneumonia. Never thought about that, did you? Okay. Think about it. Go on, beat it now. Go on home before we both take a swim.
Her mouth pulls at the corners, and she slinks away from him. The cop shakes his head and takes a notebook from the pocket of his leather jacket as the woman turns back in the direction she came. Inside the bar, a broad-chested man squints through a window and calls to her. Turning, she sees him standing under a neon cocktail sign. He sticks a lit cigarette in his mouth as he rushes outside.
Mildred, what are you doing around this pigeon perch, slummy?
What?
You sick or something?
No, I don't think so.
Well, if you're feeling weak, why don't you come inside and have a drink in the house? For free.
Taking her by the arm, he leads her inside.
You know, buying this joint was the smartest move I ever made.
The bar has a South Seas decor of bamboo screens and paper lanterns. They sit.
Here's a couple of drinks, will you, Tony?
Yes, sir.
A mix of uniformed sailors and civilians mingle in front of a low stage where a blonde showgirl performs with a band. The waiter brings the owner their drinks.
I hope you're not sore at me about this afternoon. Strictly business, see? I mean, it might just as well have been you selling me out. You can't expect it. What do you look at me like that for?
You can talk your way out of anything, can't you, Wally? You're good at that.
In my business, you have to be. Only right now, I'd rather talk myself into something. You know what I mean?
Still trying, huh?
It's a habit. I've been trying once a week since we were kids.
Twice a week.
Okay, twice. Anyhow, I'm still drawing blanks. Hey, you never used to drink it straight like that.
I've learned how these last few months. I've learned a lot of things.
Like, for instance?
Like, for instance, that's rotten liquor. There's better stuff to drink at the beach house, Wally.
Is that a dare?
Could be.
He lights another cigarette.
All right. I'll take it. You know, I like good stuff. Maybe this is my lucky day.
Maybe.
He puts on a fedora and escorts her out. The headlights of Wally's black sedan cut through the night as he pulls to the side of a rain-slicked road. Mildred opens a door to the house.
Come in.
How about your husband? Is he, getting broad-minded all of a sudden?
He walks with tiptoe steps into the beach house.
Monty isn't here.
Hmm?
Besides, you can talk your way out of anything, can't you?
Oh, I get by, all right. He keeps saying that.
Do I?
Yeah.
She turns on a light, and they go downstairs.
Nervous, Wally?
No, no, cold. Temporarily.
Upstairs, the dead man lies on a shag rug.
Isn't this more comfortable?
Yeah, I guess so, but,
What's the matter?
Nothing.
You don't seem very happy here.
Oh, I'm happy, believe me. Inside, my heart is singing.
That's pretty corny, Wally.
Yeah, well, I'm a corny guy, but I'm smart, too.
They each sip a cocktail.
I wonder about things.
What things?
Well, for instance, I wonder why you brought me here tonight. I mean, all of a sudden, boom, husband gone, soft lights, quiet room, opportunity. Why?
Maybe I find you irresistible, Wally.
Yeah? You know, you make me shiver, Mildred. You always have.
You make love so nicely, Wally. You always have.
You know, Mildred, all my life when I've wanted something, I've gone after it. I get it, too. May take me a little time, okay, but I get what I want.
Do you? Must be nice.
Yeah. It is.
Mildred knocks his glass to the floor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, what's the score?
I feel sticky. I think I'd better change my dress.
Yeah? Yeah, sure, Mildred. It's a good idea.
I'll only be a minute.
Wally watches her walk into a bedroom.
Leave the door open so we can talk.
I like to hear you talk.
Yeah? So do I. Something about the sound of my own voice that fascinates me. You know, I'm glad you didn't get sore at me the way I took you over the hurdles, Mildred. I didn't mean to cut up your business the way I did. I just got started and couldn't stop. I can't help myself. I see an angle right away, I start cutting myself a piece of throat. It's an instinct.
He sips Mildred's drink.
With me being smart's a disease, know what I mean?
The bedroom door closes.
Hmm?
He stands up.
Hey, Mildred. Hurry up. You know I don't like to drink alone. Hey, say something. This one-sided conversation is beginning to bore me.
Outside, Mildred hurries down the back steps and across the beach. Inside, Wally takes another drink.
Huh?
He strides to the closed bedroom door and tries the doorknob.
Hey, Mildred. Mildred. Hey, come on, Mildred, don't play any games. I'm a nice guy up to a certain point, but don't get me sore. Mildred.
Long shadows thrown off by table lamps crisscross the room's wood-paneled walls. Wally sets his drink on the arm of a sofa and tries another door.
Hey, what's the matter? What kind of a business is this anyway?
He returns to the main room, scans the area, then starts up the spiral staircase.
Mildred!
He charges up the shadowy stairs. At the top, he looks around.
Mildred!
The flickering light of a fireplace dances in the living room shag rug as Wally hurries past. He crosses to another door as the lights from a passing car shine against the wall. Quickening his step, Wally strides past the living room to a door beside a changing screen. Frantic, he spins around and knocks over a floor lamp. It lands beside the outstretched arm of the corpse. Wally kneels beside the thin mustached man and stares at his lifeless face. Bracing himself with one arm, he looks around the room, his mouth hanging open. Wally stands up, glances down at the body, then hesitantly approaches the telephone. He holds his hand over the receiver. Suddenly, he rips the cord from the wall and hurries out of the room. In a shadowy hallway, Wally spins around as another car passes the house. Moving quickly, he tries the handle to a pair of French doors, then picks up a chair and smashes the glass. He steps onto a balcony just as a police cruiser pulls up.
Hit that house with the light.
The spotlight finds Wally clutching his wrist and running across the sand. The officer fires a warning.
Hey, stop you!
Okay, okay.
They rush down a slope to the beach and frisk him.
What's the hurry, pal?
No gun.
Better take a look in that house and see what's going on. This guy came through that window like he was shot out of a cannon.
He points to Wally's wrist.
Is that coming out of the window?
No, I cut myself shaving.
All right, get going, smart guy. You need some fixing.
Oh, brother, I'm so smart as a disease.
All right, go ahead.
At the patrol car, he dresses Wally's wound.
What were you doing in that house, pal? Picking up a few souvenirs, maybe?
No, pal, nothing petty. You know, there's a pretty big night for you.
Yeah?
Yeah, lots of excitement. There's a stiff in there.
Is that so? Oh, and I suppose you were running right down to the station reporting.
Yeah.
Hey, he says there's a dead guy in the house.
You never saw a deader.
Better call headquarters.
The other officer picks up the radio mic.
Car 93 calling KQBB. Car 93 calling KQBB.
Later that night, a taxi drops Mildred off at an imposing white mansion. She unlocks the front door and steps into a marble-floored foyer. A young woman dressed in a bathrobe leaves two men in a parlor and rushes to Mildred's side.
Mother, where have you been? What's happened? They won't tell me anything.
Who won't tell you anything? And who's they?
These men.
They wear dark trench coats and grim frowns.
Mrs. Berrigan?
Yes.
We're from headquarters. The inspector would like to have you come down and have a little talk with him if it's convenient.
Why? What's the matter?
I'm sorry, lady. We only ask the questions. Besides, we don't rightly know what the trouble is. Probably just something about the car or something.
At this time of night?
Mildred holds her daughter.
It's all right, darling. Whatever it is, I'll take care of it. You're not to think about it at all. Now go to bed, please.
Mother.
Please, go on.
Mildred faces the two detectives.
Can't you tell me what's happened?
We'd better go.
They escort her to the door as Mildred's daughter bolts up the stairs. Outside, the detectives don their fedoras.
What's wrong? What's the matter?
Didn't want to say anything in front of your daughter. It's your husband. He's been murdered.
Murdered?
A long black car pulls up to the front door and they all climb into the back seat with Mildred between the policemen. Now, an inlaid seal on a marble floor reads, Hall of Justice, Los Angeles. Flanked by the detectives, Mildred turns down a shadowy corridor. A uniformed officer standing guard watches the trio pass, light glinting off his revolver. They come to the closed door of room 220, Criminal Division main office. Mildred and the detectives enter and approach a counter manned by a pipe-smoking policeman.
All right, Joe, what you got?
It's Mrs. Pierce. I mean Berrigan.
Which is it, Pierce or Berrigan? Make up your mind.
Mildred Pierce Berrigan.
Okay, we'll her in.
They go through a door and into an office.
Right over there, please.
Mrs. Berrigan just came in. Sit down, he'll be right with you.
She sits at the desk of a detective in a dark suit and hat. Behind her, she recognizes a woman in a fur coat. An officer grabs the woman's arm.
Look, I bruise easy. I don't
know. No talking.
He picks up a receiver.
Yeah? Ida Corwin.
Ida walks toward an inner office as the bar owner, Wally, comes out.
Well, what is this, a class reunion?
Looks like it.
Wally swaggers over to Mildred.
I'll have a tough time talking my way out of this.
Leave him away.
All right, all right.
Mildred's dark eyes follow Wally as an officer escorts him away. Now, a wall clock reads 2:01 a.m. A reporter enters.
Hi, Ed. Charlie, what's a good word?
My feet hurt. That's a good word.
You got me crying. How about a nice juicy item for the morning edition?
No, not today.
What's she in for?
Parking gum under a seat in a movie. Satisfied?
Okay, Charlie, okay.
He marches to a water cooler. The door to the inner office opens, and out walks a tall man in a dark pinstripe suit.
Sorry, Mildred, I just couldn't
help it. Don't talk.
Mildred meets the man's solemn gaze.
Take a seat.
The two men sit nearby.
You know that guy?
Yes, we were married once.
The man stares back at her, then turns away. Later, the clock reads 2:45. Mildred's detective tosses a newspaper on the desk.
Paper lady?
No, thank you.
An officer sharpens his pencil. Fidgeting in her chair, Mildred watches another detective pace as he reads. A third detective straightens his newspaper. The whistling detective sits. Mildred's detective answers.
Yeah? Okay. He wants you now. Now you can talk.
The first two detectives follow Mildred into the inner office. Inside the dimly lit room, two men work at desks. One of them stands up as they enter.
Inspector Peterson, Mrs. Berrigan.
How do you do, Mrs. Berrigan?
How do you do?
Won't you sit down?
She slowly sits.
Sorry about your husband. Must be a shock to you. Well, I'm afraid I don't quite know how to begin.
You see, the fact of the matter is, Mrs. Berrigan, we don't need you.
You don't need me?
I don't know how to apologize for bringing you down here for nothing, but you understand. We had to be sure. Well, now we are sure.
Aren't you going to ask me questions? I thought you would ask me questions.
I know, Mrs. Berrigan. Everybody thinks the detectives do nothing but ask questions. But detectives have souls, same as anyone else. Cigarette? Go ahead. It's all right. You know, Mrs. Berrigan, being a detective is like, well, like making an automobile. You just take all the pieces and put them together one by one. First thing you know, you got an automobile. Or a murderer. And we got him. Oh, you're in the clear, Mrs. Berrigan. The case is on ice. Oh, you can go now. All right, men.
He gets out of his chair and Mildred stands.
Could you... Would you tell me who...
Who did it? Sure. You're entitled to know.
He presses a button. In the outer office, a detective leads Mildred's former husband to the door and they go inside.
No. No.
His piercing glare meets Mildred's wide, glistening eyes.
Yes. He did it. Your first husband, Pierce.
No, Bert, I won't let you do this. What about Wally Fay? How do you know he didn't do it?
Fay had no motive. This man had. You see, Mrs. Berrigan, we start out with nothing. Just a corpse, if you'll pardon the expression. Okay. We look at the corpse and we say, why? What was the reason? And when we find the reason, we find the man that made the corpse. In this case, him.
Come on.
Bert glares at Mildred as the detectives lead him out. She turns back to the inspector.
I tell you, he didn't do it. I know he didn't.
Do you?
Peterson takes out a revolver.
The murder was committed with this. You know who it belongs to?
No, I don't know.
We do. It belongs to Pierce. That's fact number one. Fact number two, he doesn't deny killing Berrigan. He seems to think it was a good idea. And if there's one thing we know from experience, it's that an innocent man always denies the crime. Loud and often. Pierce doesn't. So, do you blame us for feeling fairly confident that he's the man who put four shots out of six into Berrigan?
I
But he didn't. He couldn't. He's too gentle and kind.
Okay, he's kind and gentle. He's wonderful. But if he's so wonderful, Mrs. Berrigan, why did you divorce him?
Leaning over the desk, Mildred lowers her eyes and slumps into her chair.
Because I was wrong. It's taken me 4 years to find that out. But now I know I was wrong.
Let's see. 4 years ago, he was in the real estate business, wasn't he?
Yes. He and Wally Faber were partners. For a long time, they made good money. They built a lot of houses. Suddenly, everybody stopped buying. The boom was over.
Yes?
And one day, they split up. Wally was in and Bert was out. They weren't partners anymore. That day when Bert came home, he was out of a job.
Well, here's the mail for you, Mr. Pierce.
Thanks, Jack. Hey, have you got a change of address card?
Why, yeah.
Thanks.
Bert walks to a one-story Spanish-style home.
We lived on Corvallis Street, where all the houses looked alike. Ours was number 1143. I was always in the kitchen. I felt as though I'd been born in a kitchen and lived there all my life, except for the few hours it took to get married. Is that you, Bert?
Yeah, who else?
I thought it might be Mrs. Whitley calling for a cake.
Well, it isn't.
I married Bert when I was 17. I never knew any other kind of life, just cooking and washing and having children. Two girls, Vida and Kay.
As Bert lies down on the sofa with his newspaper, Mildred hurries out of the kitchen.
I pressed you with a pair of pants. I thought you might want to see McGlary about that salesman's job.
It might be nice, Mildred, if you left me alone once for just 5 minutes. When the time comes, I'll get a job.
I know you will, Bert. I was just trying to help.
Mildred answers the front door in a light cotton dress and apron.
Good afternoon. Package for me, Langland.
Bert gets up off the couch as Mildred signs for the package.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's that?
A dress.
For Vida?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so. Where'd you get the money?
Baking cakes and making pies for the neighbors. That's where I got it. I earned it.
That's right. Throw it up to me that I can't support my own family.
I'm sorry, Bert, but I don't say half as much as most women would say with nothing but bills staring them in the face.
Go ahead. Keep it up. Maybe you wouldn't have so many bills if you didn't try to bring up those kids like their old man was a millionaire. No wonder they're so fresh and stuck up. That Vida. I tell you, I'm so fed up with the way she hi-hats me that one of these days I'm going to cut loose and slap her right in the face.
Bert, if you ever dare touch Vida, I'll...
She turns and walks back into the kitchen. Bert follows.
All right, all right. Trouble is, you're trying to buy love from those kids and it won't work. Well, I'm no bargain, but I make enough to get by. But no, that isn't good enough. Vida has to have a piano and lessons and fancy dresses so she can sit up on a platform smirking her way through a piece any five-year-old with talent could play.
Vida has talent. Just ask any of the neighbors.
Yeah. She plays the piano like I shoot pool. And Kay, a nice, normal little kid who wants to skip rope and play baseball. But she's got to take ballet lessons. She's going to become a ballet dancer so you can feel proud of yourself.
All right, what of it? What if I do want them to amount to something? I'll do anything for those kids. Do you understand anything?
Yeah? Well, you can't do their crying for them.
I'll do that, too. I'll never do any crying if I can help it.
There's something wrong, Mildred. I don't know what. I'm not smart that way. But I know it isn't right to...
Wiping her hands, Mildred answers.
Hello?
I just wanted to know if...
Yes? Yes, he is. Who's calling? Just a moment.
She glares.
It's for you, Mrs. Biederhoff.
Yeah, Maggie? I can't talk to you now. I told you not to.
I tried to call you at the office.
I can't talk to you now. Later.
So the noble Mr. Pierce can't talk right now. He's too busy telling his wife that what's wrong with their married life is the way she treats the children.
Well, Maggie means nothing to me. You know that.
Wish I could believe it. You better run down there and apologize, or she won't play gin rummy with you anymore. It is gin rummy, isn't it?
Now, look, Mildred, don't go too far. One of these days, I'll call your bluff.
Oh, no, you're not calling me. I'm calling you. You might as well get this straight right now once and for all. Those kids come first in this house, before either one of us. Maybe that's right, maybe it's wrong, but that's the way it is. I'm determined to do the best I can for them. If I can't do it with you, I'll do it without you.
Oh, so now we're getting down to the point. You're looking for an excuse to heave me out in my ears, is that it?
I didn't say...
Well, I'm fed up. Let's see you get along without me for a while. When you want me, you know where to find me.
Bert. You go down to that woman's house again and you're never coming back here. I mean that.
Oh, I go where I want to go.
Then pack up, Bert.
All right, I will.
He starts off, then stops and lowers his head.
Kids haven't come home yet, huh?
No, not yet.
I, I don't want you to tell them I said goodbye or anything like that. You can just say that...
I know. I'll take care of
it. Okay, then. I'll leave it to you. Goodbye, Mildred.
Go on, Bert. There's nothing more to say. Just go on.
Bert turns and stiffly walks away. Mildred leans against the kitchen wall and sobs. Outside, a girl in overalls plays football with boys in the street. Nearby, a preppy teenage girl watches, then drags the younger girl out of the game.
Hey, for goodness sake.
Oh, what's eating you?
You're coming home with me.
Oh, I ain't done nothing. You never let anybody have fun.
Look at your clothes. Honest, Kay, I think you ought to take a little more pride in the way you look. You act like a peasant.
All pretzels. What do I care?
You'll care someday, Miss Smarty. Wait till you get interested in boys.
I got over that when I was 8.
The girls stop outside the house. In the driveway, Bert piles clothes and a suitcase into the back seat of his car. Vita looks down at Kay, who shrugs. Unaware of the girls, Bert gets into the car and drives away. Mildred watches from the kitchen window, then wipes her eyes as the girls come into the kitchen.
Okay. All right, I'll try. Hello, Mom.
Hello, darling.
Good afternoon, Mom.
Hello, darling.
Who's the cake for?
Eddie Whitley. It's his birthday.
Oh, that goon.
How'd the lesson go today, Vita?
Oh, I'm learning a new piece.
Are you?
Valse Brillant. That means brilliant waltz.
Does it really?
Mm-hmm. I saw Father go out.
Did you? Why don't you play your new piece for me, Vita? I'd love to hear it.
Oh, all right.
When do we eat?
Now, you stop that or you'll spoil your dinner.
Okay.
Look at your clothes.
I know. I should have been a boy.
Come on, bring me those dishes off the sink, will you, darling?
Okay.
Kay joins her mother in setting the dining room table.
Father had a suitcase with him.
Did he? That's a lovely piece, Vita.
Where was he going?
I don't know.
How long will he be gone?
It's hard to say. Don't stop playing, darling.
Is he coming back? Has he gone for good?
Clutching the dishes, Mildred stops and turns to face her two girls.
Look, you might as well know it now, both of you. Your father and I have decided to separate.
You mean Dad's not coming home anymore? Doesn't he like us?
Oh, it has nothing to do with you, honey. It just couldn't be helped. We'll have to get along by ourselves now.
What did you and Father quarrel about?
I can't tell you now. Someday I will, but not now.
If you mean Mrs. Biederhoff, Mother, I must say my sympathy is all with you. She's distinctly middle class.
Please, Vita, it wasn't Mrs. Biederhoff. It was just little things, mostly about your dress.
My dress? It came?
Yes, it's upstairs in your room.
Oh, come on.
Oh, okay.
Upstairs, Vita tries on the dress.
You ought to do something about your sit-down.
What's wrong with it?
Sticks out.
It's the dress. It's awful cheap material. I can tell by the smell.
What do you expect? Wanted inlaid with gold?
Well, it seems to me if you're buying anything, it should be the best. This is definitely not the best.
Oh, quit. You're breaking my heart.
Oh, it's impossible. Look at it. Ruffles. I wouldn't be seen dead in this rag. It's horrible. How could she have bought me such a thing?
Listening from the hall, Mildred turns away. Later, she sorts through bills.
It didn't take me long that night to figure out that I was dead broke. And with Bert gone, it looked as though I'd stay broke. I felt all alone. For the first time in my life, I was lonely. There was so much to remind me of Bert, and how things used to be with us, and what great hopes we had.
She finds a gun in the desk. She slips the revolver back into the drawer along with a handful of family pictures. Dressed in a striped bathrobe, she strides through the living room to the front door and glances through the small square window.
Hi, Mildred.
Hello, Ollie.
Bert around?
Not right now, he isn't.
Well, I'll see him Monday. He left things in sort of a mess over at the office, and I thought maybe you could help us straighten them out. Ask him to drop over, will you?
Well, if it's important, you better find him yourself. He isn't living here anymore.
He cracks a smile.
You mean you busted up?
Something like that.
For good?
As far as I know.
If you don't know, I don't know who does know. You here all alone?
No, I have the children.
Bert must be crazy. You know, I never did mind being around you, Mildred.
You don't by any chance hear opportunity knocking, do you?
Me? I'm conscientious. Not too much ice in that drink you're about to make for me.
Oh, you're moving in?
Maybe. Anyhow, I'm not going to cry my eyes out about you and Bert splitting up. I like the idea. Makes me feel good.
Wish it made me feel good, too.
I like scotch.
I know what you like.
With soda. You know, I've always been a little soft in the head where you're concerned.
You surprise me.
No, this is on the level. Bert's gone? Okay. I figured maybe there's a chance for me now. You know, I wouldn't drop dead at the idea of marrying you.
Quit kidding, will you?
No, I figured maybe one of these days you might have a weak moment.
If I do, I'll send you a telegram. Collect.
Easy on the ice for this, will you? No soda?
Sorry, Bert never had it around.
We'll take care of that. Say when?
Not for me. I'm not used to it.
Take care of that, too.
You're pretty sure of yourself, aren't you?
You gotta be educated, Mildred. You just joined the biggest army in the world. The great American institution that never gets mentioned on the 4th of July. A grass widow with two children to support.
He tugs the belt on her robe.
Wally, why don't you make an effort to grow up?
I should make an effort to forget Bert.
Oh, maybe I don't want to.
But you'd be lonesome, Mildred. You're not the kind of a woman to get along by herself.
Well, I can try.
Oh, come on, get wise.
Wally, you should be kept on a leash. Now, why can't you be friendly?
But I am being friendly.
No, I mean it. Friendship's much more lasting than love.
Yeah, but it isn't as entertaining.
He kisses her.
Cut it out, Wally. You make me feel just like Little Red Riding Hood.
And I'm the big bad wolf, huh? Nah, Miller, you got me wrong. I'm a romantic guy, but I'm no wolf.
And quit howling. I know you romantic guys. One crack about the beautiful moon and you're off to the races.
Especially when it looks like a sure thing.
He leans over.
Here we go again.
Did I do something wrong?
You better go, Wally.
No dice, huh?
Good night.
Well, no dice, no dice. You can't shoot a guy for trying. I just thought maybe it... Oh, Mildred, I was only kidding. I wouldn't pull any cheap trick like that on you. You know that.
Yes, I know.
Well, she holds open the front door.
I said good night, Wally.
Okay, okay. Round one goes to Bill Pierce.
There won't be any round two.
We live in hope. I'll keep on trying.
I know. Once a week.
Twice a week.
Shaking her head, she shuts the door. Later, Mildred goes upstairs to Vita and Kay's room.
Vita, you awake?
Yes, Mother.
Shh. You awake, Kay?
No, she's tired out. She cried herself to sleep.
Poor darling. Was it about her father?
Yes. Is he going to marry Mrs. Peterhoff?
Mildred tucks Kay's blankets.
I don't know.
I do.
I do know that you should be asleep.
I've been thinking.
What about?
I heard you and Wally talking.
Well?
You could marry him if you wanted to.
But I'm not in love with him.
But if you married him, maybe we could have a maid like we used to. And a limousine. And maybe a new house. I don't like this house, Mother.
Neither do I, but that's no reason for me to marry a man I'm not in love with.
Why not?
Vida, does a new house mean so much to you that you would trade me for it?
I didn't mean it, Mother. I don't care what we have, as long as we're together. It's just that there are so many things that we should have and haven't got.
I know, darling. I know. I want you to have nice things. And you will have. Wait and see. I'll get you everything, anything you want. I promise.
How?
I don't know. But I will. I promise.
Mildred swats her daughter playfully.
Come on, go to sleep.
All right.
Happy dreams, sweet.
Thank you.
I love you, my dear.
I love you, Mother.
Mildred hugs
her. Really, I do. But let's not be sticky about it.
Mildred's face falls. Then, smiling, she pulls away and turns out the light.
Good night.
Vita lies back with a satisfied smile. Later, in her own room, Mildred tears an item from the paper.
I had to get a job, any kind. I had no experience in the business world, but I had to get a job. I walked my legs off. Getting a job wasn't as easy as I thought. Days seemed like weeks, and always, everywhere I went, I heard the same thing.
Sorry, we need people with experience.
I was tired and sick at heart when I saw the restaurant, and I decided to go in for a cup of tea.
Inside at the hostess stand, Ida Corwin approaches Mildred with a menu.
Good afternoon.
She leads Mildred to a table, her lanky frame moving swiftly past the crowded booths.
Sit here.
Ida frowns at a waitress.
And you?
She steps away from the table.
Clear the dirty dishes off number three. Pick up your feet for crying out loud. Roast chicken is very nice.
She hurries away again after two other waitresses.
Oh, go chase yourself. I didn't take your rotten tip. I've got tips of my own.
What's the trouble?
Oh, she's been doing it all along, lifting tips. I see.
Mildred watches them.
Go into the kitchen now. Get going.
She does it on my table, too.
How about some service?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll have someone take care of you right away.
Another waitress joins in. Ida rushes back to Mildred's table.
Sorry to leave you like that, but we're so short-handed, and now this. Let's see, you want a tea?
No, I want a job.
What?
Well, you seem to need help, and I want a job.
Did you ever work in a restaurant before?
No.
Follow me.
Mildred ducks around a waitress. Ida smirks.
Kind of a nervous gal, aren't you?
I'm just a little over-anxious, I guess.
Well, you want to watch that. It's tough on dishes.
Later, in a locker room.
Personally, I don't think you're the type for the work, but against my better judgment, I'll give you a trial. Now, you'll need white shoes. Ask for nurse's regulation, any of the stores, $2.95. We furnish a uniform, but it comes off your first check, $3.95. You get it at cost and keep it laundered. If you don't suit us, we charge you 25 cents on the uniform. That comes off your check, too. Keep your own tips. Here, have your tea.
Thank you. What's your name?
Ida. What's yours?
Mildred Pierce.
In the kitchen, waitresses in checkered uniforms push toward the cook.
One rare lamb plate.
Two chicken dinners, one without gravy.
Two chickens, whole, one gravy. You can't say without, you gotta say whole.
I learned the restaurant business. I learned it the hard way. In 3 weeks, I was a good waitress.
One chicken, whole veg.
Chicken, whole veg.
Steak medium.
Steak medium.
Club stand, roast beef, hold one, common salad.
Common salad.
In 6 weeks, I felt as though I'd worked in a restaurant all my life. And in 3 months, I was one of the best waitresses in the place. I took tips and was glad to get them. And at home, I baked pies for the restaurant.
A short black woman helps her.
Let's see now. We have a dozen peach, a dozen berry, a dozen pumpkin, a dozen cherry. And after we finish the apple, we can quit for the night.
I don't know how you keep it up, Mrs. Pierce. Honest, I don't. Now, I'll sleep all morning, but you go down to that restaurant and work and work, just like you've been sleeping all night. Only you ain't.
Keeps me thin.
Beg pardon? Don't do nothing for me.
I was doing all right. I was doing fine. I was able to afford an expensive singing teacher for Vida and a good dancing school for Kay. Only one thing worried me, that someday Vida would find out that I was a waitress.
She finds her helper wearing a checkered uniform.
Everything all right? Oh, I had a busy day today.
That's good. Where did you get that uniform?
Miss Vida gave it to me. She makes me wear it in case I have to answer the doorbell.
Miss Vida gave it to you?
I told her you wouldn't like it, Mrs. Pierce. I told her right off. But she hollered and went on so that I put it on just to keep her quiet.
In the living room, Kay wears a shawl like a dress and a scarf tied Cuban style on her head. Her face smeared with makeup, she dances while Vida plays the piano.
South America way. Have you ever kissed in the moonlight in that grand and glorious sunny?
Is that what you learn at ballet school?
Well, do you like it?
What have you got on your face, darling?
Well,
it's just some lipstick, Mother.
Lottie, will you take Kay upstairs and wash all that goo off her face and give her a good scrubbing?
But my face don't need scrubbing. I washed it this morning.
Go on,
hurry
up.
Well, it can stand a little more soap and water.
Mildred faces Vida, who sorts through a stack of sheet music.
Vida?
Yes, Mother, what is it?
Where did you find the uniform you gave Lottie?
I was looking for a handkerchief.
In my closet?
I looked everywhere else.
Your handkerchiefs are in your own top drawer where they always are. Now, what were you doing snooping around my closet?
Really, Mother, it seems to me you're making quite a fuss about something which doesn't matter. If you bought the uniform for Lottie, and I certainly can't imagine who else you could have bought it for, then why shouldn't she wear it?
You've been snooping around ever since I got this job trying to find out what it is. And now you know. You know, don't you?
Know what? Know what, Mother?
You knew when you gave that uniform to Lottie that it was mine, didn't you?
Your uniform?
Yes, I'm waiting tables in a downtown restaurant.
My mother, a waitress.
I took the only job I could get so you and your sister could eat and have a place to sleep and some clothes on your backs.
Aren't the pies bad enough? Did you have to degrade us?
Vida, don't talk like that.
I'm really not surprised. You've never spoken of your people, who you came from, so perhaps it's natural. Maybe that's why, Father...
She strikes both Vita's cheeks. The girl holds back a sob as she gingerly rubs her face. Mildred turns away, wringing her hands.
Oh, I'm sorry I did that. I'd have rather cut off my hand. I'd never have taken the job if I hadn't wanted to keep us all together. Besides, I wanted to learn the business the best way possible.
What kind of business?
The restaurant business. I'm planning on opening a place of my own. There's money in a restaurant if it's run right.
You mean we'll be rich?
Some people have gotten rich that way.
I didn't know what to do next, but suddenly it hit me. Why not open a restaurant?
Later, she visits Wally's real estate office in a black jumper and white blouse.
Grab a seat. What? Yeah, I know it's a dog, but I happen to like red horses. Call me back, will you? Well, well, well.
Hello, Wally. It's good to see you again.
Nice to see you. Sit down. I haven't seen enough of you lately.
This is all business, Wally.
You know, you keep on refusing me. One of these days, I'm going to start thinking you're stubborn. Laugh?
No.
No laugh, huh? What's all this?
She holds some papers.
I'm going to open a restaurant.
You are?
Yes, Wally, and you're going to help me.
I am? I mean, am I?
Oh, please, Wally.
I guess I am, Mildred. What's the score?
Well, I found the location I want. It's an old house that hasn't been lived in for years from the look of it. It's right on a busy intersection, which means it's good for drive-in trade. I clocked an average of 500 cars an hour. Do you realize what that means, Wally? And there isn't another restaurant within 5 miles.
It listens good. What's the address?
35904 Glen Oaks Boulevard.
35904 Glen Oaks Boulevard? Mm-hmm. Who owns it?
I don't know, but there's a for sale sign on it.
He opens a binder. See.
I need your help in getting this place. You know what the angles are, and I don't. I want that house. Please get it for me, Wally.
All right.
He flips to a photo of a Western-style frame house.
904. There we are. Well, it's listed at 10,000. That means they'll take 8 or less because they're anxious to move the property. It's owned by the Berrigan estate. Berrigan.
Do you know them?
No, some wealthy Pasadena family got a property around here. Berrigan Manor, Berrigan Estate. There we are.
His wide face breaks into a smile.
Well, what do you know?
What is it? Well, tell me.
The Berrigans have already lost 2 pieces of property because of back taxes. Sounds as if they're broke. You know, using your gams all day hasn't hurt them a bit. Hello, hello, Mr. Berrigan, please. Now, watch your Uncle Wally go to work.
He puts his feet up.
How do you do, sir? This is Wallace Fay of Fay Real Estate. I've been looking forward to the pleasure of calling you for some time. It's regarding your property on Glen Oaks Boulevard.
He winks.
I believe I've succeeded in interesting a client of mine in the possibility of a purchase. Well, how about this afternoon? Good. We'll be right down. Faye's the name. Faye. That's right. Goodbye.
Well?
He's sweating blood already. Come on, let's go.
She takes his hand.
And remember, let me do all the talking.
Oh, Wally, you're wonderful.
Uh-uh. This is all business, remember?
Later, they arrive in Wally's car at a beach house set on a sound below the main road. He parks beneath a palm tree, then helps Mildred out of the car. As they start toward the house, Wally flashes Mildred his crossed fingers. A wooden walkway leads them past a wall of paned windows to the front door. Wally twirls his hat around his fingers as a houseman shows them in.
Will you wait here, please?
They walk out of the hallway into a casual living room. Their host enters from another room, closed off by a curtain of Venetian blinds. He wears khaki pants with a stylish scarf draped loosely inside his open-colored shirt.
Mr. Berrigan, my name is Wallace Fay. I talked to you on the telephone. This is Mrs. Pierce, the client that I talked about.
How do you do, Mr. Berrigan?
How do you do? Would you like a drink? I'm trapped. You talked me into it.
Mrs. Pierce? As I see it, Mrs. Pierce wants to buy the house, but she doesn't want to pay for it.
Well, that's about it, Mr. Berrigan. You see, Mrs. Pierce needs a little time to get started, but once the restaurant is successful, why, she'll be in a position to buy the property outright.
I see. Very unusual proposition. How long do you think you would need, Mrs. Pierce?
Oh, I should say it would take her about a year.
You think you can make $10,000 clear?
Look, if the place is successful at all, it'll be very successful. If it isn't, you'll get your property back in much better condition than it is now. What do you say, Mr. Berrigan? I know it's a gamble, but you can't lose much.
Oh, I like to gamble, Mr. Fay, but I have to be sure of my odds, and the odds are against me. No, I'm afraid I'm not interested.
Oh, please, Mr. Berrigan, listen to me. This is a gamble for me, too. I'm putting every cent I have into this place. Believe me, I haven't much.
I can't afford to lose any more than you. Look, I've got all the information. I know exactly what it will cost and how much I can expect to make. I know I can do it. I know I can.
Very well, it's a deal.
That's great. I'll draw up the papers tonight. One more thing, Mr. Bergen. We'll need a predated transfer of ownership, if that's all right with you.
You want the transfer immediately?
Yeah, we'll give you a note to cover the purchase. You give us the deed. It's very simple.
You take care of the details. Well, Mrs. Pierce, how does it feel to be the owner of a white elephant?
Oh, it feels wonderful.
Hey, how about Uncle Wally here?
Later in Wally's convertible.
Nice guy, you know?
Very. Good looking, too.
Maybe, but no brains.
What do you mean?
Didn't you hear me counting him out of the deed of the property without putting down a cent?
Oh, sure.
You leave the angles to your Uncle Wally. See, there's one other thing that's got to be taken care of, though, kid.
What's that? Oh, sorry, I don't feel romantic this afternoon, Wally.
No, no, nothing like that. It's kind of serious, though. It's about Bert.
What's on your mind?
Well, you're not going to like this, Millard, but you're going to have to get a divorce. That is, if you want to open that restaurant.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Well, you see, in California, they got a thing called the community property law. Half of what Bert owns belongs to you.
Oh, what's half of nothing?
And well, it works two ways. Half of what you own belongs to Bert. You open that restaurant and, boom, all of Bert's creditors will be hanging around with their hands out saying, gimme.
Is a divorce the only answer?
Uh-huh. Why?
Well, it takes a year to get a divorce in California, doesn't it?
So you're not getting cold feet, are you?
Well, no, but if it takes a year, why bother to get it?
It takes a year for it to become final. Once it's entered, why, the creditors can't touch you. Your worries are over.
Well, I'm seeing Bert next week. He's coming down to take the children to Arrowhead for the weekend. Maybe I'll talk to him then. I'll think about it.
Nothing to think about. No divorce, no restaurant.
I'll think about it, Wally.
At home with Bert.
Well, I'd have to know a little more about it. Divorce is a pretty serious step, and I'm not...
Hello, Dad.
Hello, dear.
We'll be right down in a minute. Mom, Vita wants to know where a new bathing suit is.
It's in the top drawer of her dresser.
Okay. He says it's in the upper drawer of the dresser. Here.
I wonder if there are many boys up at Arrowhead.
If there are, they'll sure to find you. Don't worry.
Don't you think I hate this as much as you do? But it's got to be for the children's sake. I have to think of their future.
Avita, you think?
All right, Avita.
What about Kay?
Oh, Kay doesn't need so much thinking about.
Kay's twice the girl that Vita is and always will be. She thinks you're wonderful.
Maybe that's why I keep trying to please Vita.
You'll always get kicked around, Mildred.
Well, you ought to know. I've made up my mind I want a divorce.
I want to know more about this deal of Wally Fay's, a whole lot more.
Well, what have you got to do with that?
You're my wife, aren't you?
Yes, but you certainly seem to forget about it, especially when it comes to Maggie Biederhoff.
Well, what about you and Wally Fay?
Oh, you should know better than that. Bert, listen. I've put everything I've got into this new restaurant. I've worked with painters, carpenters, and electricians, and suddenly everything's beginning to take shape. I've worked hard and long, and I'm going to get that divorce.
Yeah, I know. You want me to poke you in the nose in front of witnesses so that you can get up in court and claim that I was guilty of cruelty. Ah, Mildred, no divorce.
I'm going to file papers, and there's very little you can do about it. I don't need your permission.
No? Well, file away. I'll fight you all the way down the line, you and Wally Fay, and what's more, I'm...
Then make sure... Oh, you don't have to worry about me.
Well, that was great.
We're all ready.
Why, how nice you look. Hello, Rita.
Thank you.
Hello, Father.
Goodbye,
darling.
Mom. Goodbye, Mother.
Well,
goodbye,
let's get
darling.
Started.
Have fun. Be careful swimming. That water's awfully cold.
Oh.
Bye.
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 Hurry.
Dad, on the way, can we stop and have a hamburger?
Oh, I guess so. Well, that's a hurry, though.
Later at the Oak Grove Boulevard restaurant, a striped awning now surrounds the back windows, and a cupola adorns the roof. Inside, Mildred works atop a stepladder. Monty enters and notices Mildred's high-heeled bare legs beneath her khaki skirt.
You know, it's moments like this that make me happy that nylons are out for the duration.
Well, if it isn't our silent partner.
As I decided, I'd been silent long enough. I came by to check up on my investment.
Well, how do you like it?
Delightful.
Are you sure you're here to check on your investment?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, then you'd better have a look at your investment. Look, over there's the counter, and here we're going to put one table, and over here we're going to put four tables. Oh, you must see the booths. We have 10 booths. Four people to a booth, that makes 40 people. We can expect
to
feed...
That's very ingenious. Look, today's a holiday. Why don't you get out of here?
Oh, I'd love to, but I'm awfully busy. Isn't the bar beautiful?
A bar, that's a novelty. I've got one at the beach house. Why don't you come down and see my ocean?
I've seen one, and if you've seen one ocean, you've seen them all, I always say. You know the way I figure. Why should people come to my place to eat and go someplace else to drink? That's why I put the bar
in. That's very logical. But to get back to my ocean, why don't you and I go down and have a swim and forget all about our investment?
Oh, I'd love to, but I've got too much work to do.
Oh, come on.
Better look out. I might say yes.
Do you know what might be a highly original thing for you to do?
No, what?
Just say yes right away like that.
No, I shouldn't.
As you grow older, you'll find that the only things you regret are the things you didn't do.
I hope you're right.
Look, why don't I pick you up at the corner of Colorado and Brand and say, 30 minutes?
No, I really can't.
He kisses her. She smiles.
How about it?
All right. You win.
Later at the beach house, he shows her a closet.
There you are. Just help yourself. If you don't find what you want, just let me know. We aim to please.
It's full of women's clothes.
Are you hoarding bathing suits?
They belong to my sisters.
There's nothing like having a large family.
Yell if you need help with the zipper.
Thank you, but I won't need any help.
How do you like your drink?
Oh, harmless.
Later, Monty, in bathing trunks and a sweater, mixes drinks. Mildred wears an oversized bathrobe around her shoulders.
I like your ocean.
I borrowed it from the Navy, especially for you.
You have a wonderful view.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I hope the suit fits better than the robe.
It does. Do you live here all the year round?
Oh, no. We have the old family mansion in Pasadena, complete with iron deer, a ghost, and a greenhouse with no flowers. I come here in the spring.
Oh, it must be lovely here.
Yes, but lonely. You know, Mildred, in the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to what he's been thinking about all winter.
It's a good thing California winters are so short.
He pulls off the robe as she passes.
No whistle?
A white two-piece suit.
I'd need a police siren.
Well, here we go.
Go where?
Swimming, isn't that why we're here?
Suppose it is.
She kicks off her shoes and skips off the porch while Monty struggles to pull off his sweater. He sprints across the sand after her and they charge into the surf. Later, a wall-sized mirror in the living room reflects Mildred, now wearing a light polka dot dress. She dries her hair in front of a roaring fire.
Drink?
No, thank you. You drink too much.
I know. I do too much of everything. I'm spoiled.
Too many sisters. They all seem to be my size, too.
Yes, I like them your size. To brotherly love.
Thank you, Mr. Berrigan. Monty Berrigan. That's a very unusual name. Spanish?
Mostly. Maybe a little Italian thrown in. But my mother is a real dyed-in-the-wool Yankee. That's why I'm such a self-controlled and dignified young fellow.
And just what do you do, Mr. Berrigan?
I loaf. Oh, in a decorative and highly charming manner.
Is that all?
With me, loafing is a science. You're very beautiful like that.
I bet you say that to all your sisters.
Shall I tell your fortune?
He lifts her palm.
Well, we Berrigans come from a long line of teacup readers.
She pulls back as he leans toward her.
I'm not very impressionable, Mildred. I lost my awe of women at an early age. But ever since that first day you came here, I thought of nothing but what I'd say to you when we met again. And now I can't say anything.
He scoots closer.
You take my breath away.
Do I? I like you, Monty. You make me feel... oh, I don't know. Warm.
Wanted. Beautiful.
Yes.
When I'm close to you like this, there's a sound in the air like the beating of wings. You know what it is?
No, what?
My heart beating like a schoolboy's.
He kisses her neck.
Is it? I thought it was mine.
Their lips touch, and Monty scoops his arms around her.
The record. Monty, the record.
Beside the mirror, a phonograph turns unattended. Now, Bert Pierce folds girls' clothing into a cardboard box.
Is he there yet? That's good. Yeah, I think I have everything we need. Yeah, I called everywhere. I'll wait another 5 minutes. Wait a minute. I think she's coming now.
Through a driving rain outside, Bert watches Mildred step out of a car, holding a newspaper over her head.
Is that a promise?
I don't know.
Thursday? Friday?
Make it Wednesday.
Monty kisses her hand.
Good. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bert rushes outside, carrying the packed cardboard box under his arm.
Where have you been?
Bert, what are you doing here?
I've been looking all over for you. Nobody knew where you were. I've been nearly nuts.
What is it?
It's Kay. She's sick. We came down from Arrowhead, 80 miles an hour, but... well, it's pneumonia.
Oh, no.
She isn't here.
Mildred stops running to the door.
She isn't here. Where is she?
Mrs. Biederhoff's.
Mildred pauses, then hurries into the car.
I was frantic. I didn't know what to do. I sent for Dr. Gale.
It's all right, Bert. Just hurry.
Later, in a dimly lit room, a nurse stands at the foot of a bed draped with an oxygen tent. A doctor reaches under the tent and consults a pocket watch in his other hand. In the bedroom doorway, Mildred holds her arm around Vita. Behind them stands a middle-aged woman with a crown of platinum blonde hair. Kay lies on her back with her mouth open.
Mommy.
Yes, darling. Mommy's here.
The doctor holds up his hand and beckons Mildred away, then turns to his nurse.
More oxygen.
Kneeling, she adjusts a flow meter dial on a tank beside Kay's bed, raising the gauge to 10 liters per minute. While the doctor fills a syringe, the jowly blonde woman stares into the room.
I hope it was all right to bring her here instead of the hospital, Doctor. But I thought it would save time.
You did the right thing.
Mildred swallows.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Mrs. Peterhoff.
The nurse raises the flow meter to 12 liters. Kay's doctor wipes off the needle with a cotton ball and hands it to the nurse.
Nurse.
Yes, doctor.
One more CC.
The family squeezes into the wide doorway with Mrs. Biederhoff standing behind. Mildred relaxes her clasp around Vita's head and moves it down to her shoulder. Bert's eyes dart, following the doctor's movements around Kay. Mildred's lips tremble. She gasps for breath.
I'm sorry, I couldn't save her.
Mildred rushes to her daughter's bedside, and the nurse kneels again, turning off the oxygen. Bert wears a dazed frown as he grips the bedpost. Beneath the oxygen tent, Mildred stares with tear-filled eyes at Kay. Gently, she kisses the child's cheek and strokes her hair. As the others leave the room, Bert stays behind, twisting the round bedpost like a knob under his hand. In the adjoining room, the doctor helps Mildred to a chair.
I'm sorry, Mildred. We did everything in our power.
Vita buries her face in her mother's lap.
I brought her into the world. It seems hard that I was the one to.
I'll fix you a nice hot cup of tea.
A mirror behind Mildred's shoulder reflects Bert's plodding walk away from the bed. He trudges toward Mildred, who holds a comforting arm around Vita.
I'll never forget it. Never as long as I live. She said, Mommy. And that was all. Oh, I loved her so much.
She squeezes Vita tightly against her, stroking her dark hair.
Please, God, don't ever let anything happen to Vita.
Later.
After that, there was only one thing on my mind. To open the restaurant and make it successful.
Over a neon sign, Mildred's searchlights streak the sky.
Short stack, easy on the butter.
From the parking lot, car hops call orders over a counter to the kitchen. Mildred, in a dark suit with a white scarf, shows a couple out. Ida Corwin runs the cash register.
I'm glad you had to stand so long, but I'm sure there'll be some.
I'm so sorry. I kept you waiting. Right this way, please.
Mildred shows another couple to their table.
We've been jammed ever since the doors opened. Here you are, right here. I'll take these, Arlene. You take the orders. We have wonderful fried chicken.
I think I'll have chicken.
I hope you like it.
She scowls at a waitress.
Pick up something. Never make a trip in or out with an empty tray like that.
Ida holds a wad of bills.
Oh, Ida, it looks like we're in.
That's what it says here. Isn't that a lovely noise?
Oh, I don't know what I would have done without you.
Probably had a nervous breakdown.
Oh, hello, Mrs.
Hello,
Stoller.
Hello, how are you? Hello,
we got your invitation. I'm so glad you could come. Suzanne.
They pass Vita and Wally's table.
I'll see you later.
Thanks.
Congratulations, Mother. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Now, how'd you like the sight of your share?
No, thank you. I know a good thing when I see it.
So do I, and I can see it. It's some mob. Those postcards you sent out certainly did the trick. Say, kid, keep my seat warm and get me another drink. We don't want to talk to your mother.
What do you want to talk to me about?
Well, it's about Bert. He's coming over here tonight.
Yes?
Yeah, I talked to him last night. He said he wanted to see. I think it's about the divorce.
Oh, what about it?
I don't know. He just said he wanted to see him, that's all.
Help me, Wally, will you? I've got to go to the kitchen. Sure, thank you.
He crashes into some customers.
Excuse me, I'm off it. Sorry. Oh, don't you look where you're going.
Excuse me for living, mister. I'm a little excited.
In the kitchen, Mildred ties an apron on him.
What is this?
Wally, you're swamped. You've got to help
me. Me? I'm an executive.
Yes, you're now vice president in charge of the potatoes. And will you pick them up and put them in the hot fat for me?
Yeah, all
thanks,
right.
Thanks,
Wally. You look very pretty. pretty, Mr. Day.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Over the counter, Wally spots Monty cross the parking lot with a corsage box tucked under his arm.
Hey,
what do you know? Barragán just came in.
Did he? That's funny. He didn't say he was coming.
What do you mean he didn't say? You been seeing him?
Oh, Wally, don't let the potatoes burn.
All right, I'm just asking a question.
Dorothy, don't ever go in like that. Put some more potatoes on. You'll never make any money that way.
Well, it's all right, as long as the customers are satisfied. Hurry up now.
This is just like my wedding night. So exciting.
Now, Monty at Ida's counter.
Will you please see that Mrs. Pierce gets these flowers?
Can I tell her your name, or is it a secret?
Just tell her they came from an old gypsy fortune teller.
Oh. Well, sit down, read a teacup, and I'll see if she's busy.
Ida pokes her head through the kitchen's swinging door.
Hey, Mildred, real live orchids.
Chicken.
For me?
Orchids? Say, when is this? Who are they from?
From an old gypsy fortune teller with beautiful brown eyes.
They come.
Put them in the icebox for me, will you, Wally?
Here, Mustard.
Wally opens the refrigerator, then instead throws the box in a short trash can stamped with black letters, refuse only. In the dining room, a waitress follows Vita back to her table.
Could you put it on this table, please?
Monty's sitting there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize this table was taken.
Oh, it's quite all right. We're so crowded tonight. Do sit down, Mr. Barragán.
Oh, please. Thank you. Have a dry martini, please?
Yes, sir.
So you know me?
Oh, everyone knows the Monty Barragán. You play polo, go yachting, are an excellent hunter, and are seen with the most attractive debutantes in California. I read the society section.
So I gather.
Maybe I should introduce myself.
Oh, no. Don't tell me. Your hand, please.
Can you tell from my hand?
I wouldn't want this to get around, but I come from a long line of fortune tellers.
Oh?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hmm.
What does it say?
It says that you are very much indeed like your mother.
Yes.
And it says that her name is Beers. Pierce.
How wonderful.
And it says that your name is Vida.
Where does it say Vida?
Oh, that line right there. Unmistakable.
Well, but isn't Gypsy Barragán?
The very same.
Well, what do you say? Looks like a pretty good investment after all, huh?
Anything you did to this white elephant would be an improvement.
Smile when you say that, Stranger. A third of this joint belongs to me.
Congratulations.
See, I've got another business proposition that might interest you. You know that orange grower you've got?
We'll save it until later. Well, here's the success.
As the evening wears on, the cook's full carousel of dinner orders spins until empty. Later in the dining room, Vida leans on a jukebox while Monty selects a song. They dance around the room.
That's a wonderful piece.
You know, Barragán, all you need now is a pair of bobby socks.
Maybe Vida will lend me a pair.
Across the dining room, Mildred drops into a chair and flexes her ankles, strapped into her shoes.
Well, the last customer just folded his tent.
That's good. We've only got one chicken left.
Put my initials on that.
Oh, I'm so tired. I don't know whether I'm walking on my feet or my ankles.
You must be dead. Well, if I am, just bury me with this.
She waves money in both hands.
Oh, I wish I felt the way they do.
No other one can make me happy.
Hi, Mildred. Congratulations. You're a success.
Your daughter and I have been getting acquainted.
Mr. Barragán has promised to take me to the races.
Only if your mother comes along.
I'd love to. Wally, do me a favor.
Anything.
Take Vida home?
Huh?
Anyone would think I was a child.
You are, and besides, it's past your bedtime.
Well, it's not way past my bedtime. Besides, I want to take you home.
Wally, look, I've got the clothes up. I'll go home with Ida. Please, come on.
Okay. This year's a big night for me. I come out looking for an evening of fun and laughter. What do I get? Dishpan hands and a date with a Girl Scout.
Good night, darling.
Good night, Mother.
Happy dreams.
Good night, Mr. Barragán. Thank you for everything. I trust that we may meet again very soon.
Oh, I hope so.
Thank you for a divine evening, Mrs. Pierce. I trust that I might see you again in the not-too-distant future. Good night.
Good night.
Come on, small
boy.
He drags her by the wrist toward the door, where Ida stands on a chair, straightening her stocking. Wally pauses.
Leave something on me. I might catch cold.
I was just thinking. Not about you.
Monty stands at the bar.
That's a very cute youngster of yours.
Yes, isn't she?
I thought you had two.
She closes the register.
Kay died.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry. You should have let me know.
Please, let's not talk about it.
You've had your tough breaks, but you're on your way now. You're going to make a go of this place.
I hope so.
But don't you ever do anything but work.
Somebody's got to.
No, but not all the time. Look, there's a time for work and a time for...
He leans over and kisses her.
6 months. Monty, don't. Not here.
Why not? I've been waiting all evening. A lifetime.
He grabs her across the bar and kisses her hard. enters and glares at them, locked in their embrace. Mildred hurries toward him.
I didn't mean to bust in like this.
That's all right. This is my husband, Mr. Berrigan, Monty Berrigan.
I've heard a lot of things about you, Mr. Berrigan.
Nice things, I hope.
If you don't mind, I'd like to speak to Mildred.
Yes, of course. What is it, Berrigan?
This will only take a minute. It's funny. It's harder to say than I thought. It's about the divorce, Mildred. You can have it. When I walked out on you that time, I told you to see if you could get along without me. I think you could. When you asked me for a divorce, I still didn't think you could make a go of it alone. But now I know better. You're doing all right, Mildred. You're doing fine.
Monty pours another drink and watches them in the mirror behind the bar.
Everything is going to end. I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm sorry, too.
Well, that's that. That's what I came to say, and now that I've said it, I just want you to know that I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you, Bert.
Monty brings over three glasses of scotch.
This calls for a drink. In the Berrigan family, there is an old Spanish proverb. One man's poison is another man's meat.
Bert slaps the glass to the floor. Clenching his teeth, he glares threateningly at Monty, then walks away. Mildred's wide-eyed gaze softens as Monty turns her toward him. Now, Mildred at Inspector Peterson's desk.
I was in love with him, and I knew it for the first time that night. But now he's dead, and I'm not sorry. He wasn't worth it.
That may be. Whoever killed him evidently agreed with you. But you still haven't given us one good reason why your first husband wasn't the murderer. In fact, you've given us a very good reason why he was. Now look at it our way. One, Berrigan was killed with Pierce's gun. Two, Pierce cannot account for his movements at the time of the murder. Three, he had a motive. You've just given it to us, Mrs. Berrigan. Jealousy.
This report just came in. Thought you'd want to see it.
Will you excuse me?
Certainly.
He clips a pair of reading glasses to the bridge of his nose.
Is he sure?
You know, Charlie, he don't like to make mistakes.
Just a minute. Mrs. Berrigan, we have some information here which puzzles us a little. For instance, your business manager.
The inspector scribbles a note and hands it right to the away. Detective.
Okay.
Ida Corwin. She tells us that you called her at approximately 11:45 in the evening and asked where Mr. Berrigan was. You seemed quite upset at the time, according to her statement.
It was just a business matter.
Then there was nothing wrong when you called?
No.
Mrs. Berrigan, occasionally we run across a witness who refuses to tell us what we want to know, except under pressure. Like Wally Fay, for example. Why did you take him to the beach house? Did you know that Berrigan was lying there dead?
No, I didn't.
Then you were at the beach house this evening. Why didn't you tell us that before?
Well, I...
And why did you run away from the house? Wasn't it because you knew Berrigan was there dead?
No, no.
And if you did know, why were you trying to pin the murder onto Faye? Why? I think you'd better tell us the truth now.
Mildred takes an uneven breath.
I did it. I killed him.
But why? Your restaurant was a success. You were in love with Berrigan. What happened to all that?
The restaurant was a greater success than I knew that night. Profits were enormous. In a few months, I opened up another place, and then I started a chain. In 3 years, I'd built up 5 restaurants. Everywhere you went, I had a restaurant. They made money. Everything I touched turned into money, and I needed it. I needed it for Vito.
At a polo match, Monty waves on horseback to Vita in the stands.
She was becoming a young lady with expensive tastes. Vita was growing up.
She poses with Monty for a picture. At a nightclub, Vita dances with a dimpled young man. Across the dining room, Mildred and Monty drink martinis in a curved booth. She wears her hair down over the broad shoulders of a white beaded gown.
That Ted Forrester's nice looking, isn't he? Vita likes him.
Who wouldn't? He has $1,000,000.
What's the matter, Monty?
Nothing. I've just run out of jokes, I guess.
What is it, Tom?
I've had a little bad luck lately. I won't be able to afford many more evenings like this.
Do you need money?
No, no, it isn't anything like that.
I think you do.
She picks up her purse.
Please don't do that.
You've been awfully good to us, Monty. Take it, please.
All right, if you say so. But I'll pay it back. I want it distinctly understood that it's only a loan.
Anything you say, just as long as we're friends.
Later, Mildred leafs through shopping bills in Monty's name.
That's how it began. At first, it bothered Monty to take money from me. Then it became a habit with him.
There's a total here of $1,480.29 in 6 months. What's the big idea?
We owe him a great deal.
The restaurant was paid for a year ago. You don't owe him a cent. Bill and I promised to manage this business for you, and I've done all right so far. But keeping Monty Berrigan in monogram shirts is not my idea of business.
No?
No. Look, I made this business for you with my own hands. I chiseled Monty out of the deed. I got the banks to give you credit, and believe me, that wasn't easy. I've conned everybody till I'm blue in the face, and for what? So you can have a lapdog named Berrigan?
Take it easy, Willie.
When you walked out on Bert, it was okay with me. I was glad to see you getting some sense in your head. But now you're falling for a guy that's the worst foul ball than Bert ever thought of being.
That's none of your business.
I say it is. I'm not the type that likes to be left out in the cold. The only reason I helped you was so I could be around when you changed your mind about me. Maybe I was wrong.
Maybe you were.
You're making a mistake, Miller. This Berrigan is no good. He'll bleed you dry.
Suppose I'm in love with him.
Wally pauses as he lights a cigarette, then blows out the match.
Okay. Guess now I know where I stand.
That's right, now you know.
As she returns to her ledger, he stands to go, meeting Ida at the door as she enters.
I hate all women.
My.
Thank goodness you're not one.
Ida's full lips smirk.
Laughing boy seems slightly burned at the edges. What's eating him?
Small green-eyed monster.
Jealous? Doesn't sound like Wally. No profit in it. And there is a boy that loves a dollar.
I just told him I was in love with Monty Berrigan.
Are you?
Her gaze drifts.
I thought I was once. But not now.
Good.
She throws something down.
What's that? Little $1,800 birthday present for Miss Vida.
Oh, the card. It's here. Where is it?
It's that shiny thing, a block and a half long.
Mildred pulls up the shades, revealing a convertible coupe.
Do you think she'll like it?
She doesn't. She ought to have her head examined for holes. Here, you have to sign this in blood.
Ida follows her to the desk.
Mildred, I know it isn't any of my business,
but... If it's about Monty, I agree with you.
It's Vida. She's been borrowing money.
From whom?
Anybody who'd give her any. Waitresses, mostly.
Hasn't she paid them back?
They're afraid to say anything or turn her down. You know how it is.
Well, tell them to come to me. I'll see if they're paid back.
I'm sorry I had to tell you, Mildred. I don't blame her so much. A couple of times Monty was with her.
Did you bring the Laguna Beach and Los Feliz statements with you?
Yeah, they're over here.
Vida enters with Monty.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Mother, darling.
Hello, Vida.
Hello, Monty.
Hello. I hope we aren't interrupting a big business conference.
Just a teeny one.
Oh, I wish I could get that interested in work.
You were probably frightened by a callus at an early age.
She here, goes I'll to Vida's that. Chair.
One missing. You're sitting on the Laguna Beach statement.
That's what I like about you, Ida. You're so delightfully provincial.
I like you, too. Don't look now, Junior, but you're standing under a brick wall.
I don't get it.
You will, when it falls on you.
Vida, in a tailored woman's suit, lights a cigarette.
When did you start smoking?
Oh, just the other day. Monty gave me this for my birthday, and I couldn't hurt him by not using it. I mean, that would have been dreadfully recherché, n'est-ce pas?
She holds a cigarette case.
Yes, I suppose so. Here's something for your birthday, too. I hope you like it, darling.
Mother, a car?
Mm-hmm.
Where is it?
Look out the window.
She kneels on a cushioned bench to look out.
Oh, Mother, it's beautiful.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it.
Hey, how about me, young lady? After all, I picked it out, you know.
Monty, it's the nicest present I ever got. You're sweet. Really, you are. Let's go for a drive.
Nothing I'd like better.
Monty, do you mind? I'd like to talk.
Why, not at all. Run along and dent your fenders.
All right.
See you later at the club.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful, darling.
I will. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
She trots out to the car, then settles into the deep front seat and closes the driver's side door, monogrammed VP. She waves to Mildred and Monty inside.
Bye.
Mildred waves proudly as Vida backs out of the parking lot. Leaning over her, Monty squeezes the padded shoulders of Mildred's pinstriped suit and nuzzles her neck. She stiffens and moves away from the window.
What's the matter?
I want you to do me a favor.
Sure, what?
Stay away from Vida.
Why, what's the matter with me if I suddenly sprouted two heads?
I just don't want you to take her out so much, that's all.
Oh.
And it isn't funny. She's only 17 years old and spoiled rotten.
What has that got to do with me?
Look, Monty, I've worked long and hard trying to give Vida the things I never had. I've done without a lot of things, including happiness sometimes, because I wanted her to have everything.
I'm losing her. She's drifting away from me. She hardly speaks to me anymore except to ask for money or poke fun at me in French because I work for a living.
All kids are thoughtless at her age.
Perhaps, but I still don't like it. I blame it on the way she's been living. I blame it on you.
I don't think you'll understand Vita very well. She's not like you. You'll never make a waitress out of her.
You look down on me because I work for a living, don't you? You always have. All right, I work. I cook food and sell it and make a profit on it. Which I might point out, you're not too proud to share with me.
Yes, I take money from you, Mildred. But not enough to make me like kitchens or cooks. They smell of grease.
I don't notice you shrinking away from a $50 bill because it happens to smell of grease.
Take it easy now.
There's no point in going on like this. You're interfering with my life and my business. And worst of all, you're interfering with my plans for Vita, and I won't stand for it.
I always knew that someday we'd come to this particular moment in the scheme of things. You want Vita and your business and a nice, quiet life, and the price of all that is me. You can go back to making your pies now, Mildred. We're through.
Wait a minute, Monty. I forgot something.
He pauses, one hand in his pocket and a cigarette dangling from his lips. Mildred sits down and opens a ledger book.
You've been very good to us. I know you've had expenses taking Vita out. I don't know how much we owe you, but...
She writes a check.
That isn't enough. You can let me know.
He glances at it, then folds it in half.
Thank you. I've always wondered how it felt to take a tip.
Well, now you know.
You can mark our account paid in full.
He flings open the office door and marches down the covered patio. Watching him go, Mildred swallows a laugh, then yanks down the window shades. Now in a bar, Wally opens champagne.
I'd like some of that.
You gotta work for it, kid. Keep your motor running.
He takes it to Vita miles. And Ted Forrester.
Hey, it's beginning to look serious.
It is.
Huh? Yes, we finally made up our mind.
So? Well, this calls for a celebration. Congratulations, Romeo.
You've been swell to us, Mr. Fay.
Forget it, kid. I get a kick out of doing things for other people. Don't I, Vita?
Absolutely.
It's just like we never serve champagne in this joint. Or place, excuse me. Kids, try this on for size. This is some of our very best reserved for special customers. California 42. Well, here's to true love.
The true love.
Vita eyes Wally over her glass as she sips. Now, in Mildred's office, a balding man looks at her ledgers.
The receipts of the establishment at Arcadia have dropped roughly 7% during the last month.
Say, Mildred.
Nearly 8%.
There's Mrs. Forrester waiting in the patio to see you.
Oh, what about?
Vita. Excuse me, Mr. Jones.
You always interrupt.
It's only because I want to be alone with you. Come here and let me bite you, you darling boy.
Mr. Jones cowers, now on an outdoor terrace.
Mrs. Pierce?
Yes.
I'm Mrs. Forrester, Ted's mother.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Forrester? Won't you come over here and sit down? I think it'll be more comfortable for you.
Thank you. I've been looking forward so much to meeting you, Mrs. Pierce. I'm sure we're going to work out our little problem splendidly.
Little problem?
Vita hasn't told you.
Told me what?
Your daughter has somehow got the idea that... Well, I understand it, of course. Any girl wants to get married. But Ted had no such thing in mind. I want that made clear.
You mean they're engaged, Vita and your son?
Yes. But I'm quite sure you'll agree with me, Mrs. Pierce, that any discussion of marriage between them would be most undesirable.
Why should Vita want to marry your son if he doesn't want to marry her?
I'm not a mind reader, Mrs. Pierce, but let me tell you one thing. If you or this girl or anybody employs any more tricks trying to blackmail my son...
Trying to what?
Understand me, Mrs. Pierce. I shall prevent this marriage. I shall prevent it in any way that I can.
I don't think you need worry, Mrs. Forrester. Having you and my family is a pretty dismal prospect. Good afternoon.
Later, Mildred returns home to Carballa Street and finds Vita sitting in the living room with Wally Fay.
Vita, I want to talk to you.
Hi, Mildred.
Hello, Wally.
What about?
Mrs. Forrester came to see me today. Wally, do you mind? This is private.
That's all right, Mother. Wally knows about it.
He knows that you and Ted want to get married?
Want to get married? We are married. We were married on my birthday. I'm sorry, but it's done.
You see, Mildred, Vita was trying to spare you. She wanted to make things easier for you, so she asked me to help.
Why didn't you tell me?
I wanted to so many times, but you seemed so far away. I couldn't somehow. I was afraid.
Afraid of your own mother.
Oh, Mother, I've been so miserable. I made a mistake. I didn't know how to tell you.
Mildred hugs her.
Darling, don't you love Ted?
Vida turns an eye to Wally, then frowns.
No, Mother.
Mildred squeezes her tighter.
I'm sorry about that, Vida. But maybe we don't belong in a family like that anyway.
That's right, Mildred. Vida doesn't love this boy. All right, so she made a mistake. The only thing to do is to settle a case out of court. That's the clean, quick way to handle a situation.
Later, the newlyweds and their mothers meet in a lawyer's office with Wally.
I, of my own free will, renounce all right and title that I or my heirs and assignees may have to any monies or estate, real or otherwise, which will accrue or evolve to Theodore Ellison Forrester in exchange for considerations of value received. Are you agreeable to this waiver?
Please, why can't we stay married? I don't see
Theodore,
why...
Theodore, you will be good enough to keep quiet.
Yes, Mother.
I think we can assume that the waiver is acceptable. Will you sign this, please?
Yeah, sure, glad to. My client feels, and I am in complete accord with her, that she has been
irreparably?
Unduly damaged. Therefore, there's one more little formality I think we should discuss first.
What's that, Mr. Fay?
The financial settlement. You see, my client would like $10,000.
I think I'm safe in observing that almost anyone would like $10,000, Mr. Fay, But we see no necessity for a financial settlement of any kind.
You don't, huh?
No.
You will?
I doubt it.
I don't understand all this. As far as I know, there's no need for a financial settlement. The only thing we're interested
Please,
in is...
Please, Mother. I need the money. I have to think of the future.
That's right.
I'm going to have a baby.
What?
What?
What? Vita.
You see, $10,000 is not entirely unreasonable.
This is moral blackmail, sir.
That's no way to talk about a baby.
I won't pay it.
Oh, yes, you will, Mrs. Forrester. Ask your lawyer. Yes?
Yes.
I guess that's about all. You can make out the check to Mrs. Forrester, Miss Vida Pierce.
Later at home.
Well, that's that.
Vida lies on the couch and kisses the check.
I'm sorry this had to happen. Sorry for the boy. He seemed very nice.
Oh, Ted's all right, really. Did you see the look on his face when we told him he was going to be a father?
I wish you wouldn't joke about it.
Mother, you're a scream. Really, you are.
The next thing I know, you'll be knitting little garments.
I don't see anything so ridiculous about that.
If I were you, I'd save myself the trouble.
As she takes the check to her purse, Mildred grips her by the arm and searches her eyes.
You're not going to have a baby?
At this stage, it's a matter of opinion. And in my opinion, I'm going to have a baby. I can always be mistaken.
How could you do such a thing? How could you?
I got the money, didn't I?
Oh, I see.
I'll have to give Wally part of it to keep him quiet, but there's enough left for me.
Money? That's what you live for, isn't it? You'd do anything for money, wouldn't you? Even blackmail.
Oh, grow up.
I've never denied you anything. Anything money could buy, I've given you. But that wasn't enough, was it? All right, Vida, from now on, things are going to be different.
I'll say they're going to be different. Why do you think I went to all this trouble? Why do you think I want money so badly?
All right, why?
Are you sure you want to know?
Yes.
Then I'll tell you. With this money, I can get away from you.
Vida.
From you and your chickens and your pies and your kitchens and everything that smells of grease. I can get away from this shack with its cheap furniture and this town and its dollar days and its women that wear uniforms and its men that wear overalls.
Vida, I think I'm really seeing you for the first time in my life, and you're cheap and horrible.
You think just because you made a little money you can get a new hairdo and some expensive clothes and turn yourself into a lady. But you can't, because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing. With this money, I can get away from every rotten, stinking thing that makes me think of this place or you.
Vida!
Mildred charges toward her.
Not on your life! I said give it to me!
Mildred tears it up. Vida slaps Mildred down. Mildred pulls herself up on the stair railing and glares wide-eyed at her daughter.
Get out, Vida. Get your things out of this house right now before I throw them into the street and you with them. Get out before I kill you.
Vida's face hardens and she runs up the stairs. Mildred's dark eyes follow her, her smooth cheeks pulled taut by a tight-lipped scowl. She breathes shallowly, trembling against the railing.
away for a while. I traveled, but not far enough. Something kept pulling me back. Finally, I gave in. I went home.
Now, at the original Glen Oaks restaurant, Lottie sweeps the outside patio.
Why, Miss Pierce, this is a day for rejoicing. It certainly is.
Hello, Lottie. How are you?
You look wonderful.
Thank you.
You've been away so long.
Yes, I've been to Mexico.
Is that a fact? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's nice to have you back. I don't know what we would have done if you'd stayed away longer.
Thank you, Lottie. It's nice to see you, too.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Welcome home, Mrs. Pearson.
Thank you, Jean. Hi, Ida.
Well, well, long time no see.
How are you?
How was Mexico?
Crowded. How's business?
Crowded. Want your desk back?
No, thanks. On you, it looks good.
You know, I like Mexico. It's so Mexican. Thanks.
Mildred's hand trembles as she lights Ida's cigarette.
You're in great shape.
Nothing like a nice long rest, is there? Got a drink handy?
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, Jean, crack open the safe and get out some of that good bourbon. You never used to drink during the day.
Never used to drink at all. It's just a little habit I picked up from men.
Oh, men. I never yet met one of them who didn't have the instincts of a heel. Sometimes I wish I could get along without them.
You've never been married, have you, Ida?
No, when men get around me, they get allergic to wedding rings. You know, big sister type. Good old Ida. You can talk it over with her man to man. Getting awfully tired of men talking to me man to man. I think I'll have a drink myself.
I'll take mine straight.
Well, if you can take it, I can.
They raise their glasses and drink. Mildred looks distractedly at her cigarette.
Seen anyone I know lately?
You mean Vida. I wondered how long it would take you to get around to that.
Yes, I mean Vida. Have you seen her, Ida? Is she all right?
Why don't you forget about her?
I can't. I've tried, but I can't.
Well, try, try again. That's my motto.
You don't know what it's like being a mother, Ida. Vida's a part of me. Maybe she didn't turn out as well as I hoped she would when she was born, but she's still my daughter, and I can't forget that. I went away to try. I was so mixed up, I didn't know where I was or what I wanted. But now I know. Now I'm sure of one thing, at least. I want my daughter back.
Personally, Vita's convinced me that alligators have the right idea. They eat their young.
Standing up, Ida sways toward the phone.
Slightly drunk. Hello?
Hello, is Mildred there?
Yes, who is it?
This is Bert.
Hold on. It's Bert. He's been calling every day on the hour for a month.
Mildred takes it.
Hello, Bert. How are you?
How are you? Just kidding.
I'm fine. Yes, I just got back this morning.
How about dinner?
What?
How about dinner tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night?
Don't you want to?
Well, of course I want to have dinner with you, but what about Mrs. Biederhoff? Maybe she wouldn't like...
She's married.
She is?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, you pick me up at the house at 7:30.
Well.
Goodbye. Imagine that. Somebody married Mrs. Biederhoff.
Well, that's a novelty. Remind me to bake a cake. How's Bert?
He's fine. He's working now.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. He has a job with Condor Aircraft.
Well, the manpower shortage must be worse than we think. To the men we have loved. The stinkers.
Later, at Wally's waterfront bar, Bert holds open the door for Mildred. A waiter leads them to a small cocktail table.
I never did like this place. Does Wally still own it?
Yeah. Two rum Collins, please.
Yes, sir.
Still don't know why you insisted on coming here.
I thought it was a good idea at the time. Now I'm not so sure.
A band overlooks the tables and a singer takes the stage.
Billy McCoy was a musical boy. On the cruiser Alabama, he was there on that piano like a fish.
Bert watches Mildred's stunned face. The singer is Vida in a sequined sarong with her dark hair swept up with flowers. As she wriggles her hips, she smiles broadly and waves a long sheer scarf. She glances at a table of sailors.
No one could sleep well there on the deep.
Bert hunches in his chair.
I'm sorry I did it like this, Mildred, but I didn't know how to tell you.
Mildred stirs her drink and nods sadly.
The ship starts into dip and there's a corkscrew turn. Now when
Wally steps into the dining room, strikes a match against the wall and lights a cigarette.
While he's sitting at that piano, there on the Alabama, playing that Oceana Row.
Mildred glares hotly at Wally and rises.
Mildred.
She pushes past other restaurant patrons toward Wally, who exhales smoke as he turns around.
Hello, Wally.
Hello, Mildred. Where to see me?
I'm going to take Vida home.
Yeah?
Vita know about that?
No. I want you to help me, Walter.
Oh, not me. She's your daughter. I've never been a father. But Vita's been here for about a month now, Miller, and I think I know the best way to handle her. Let me give you a little advice. If you want her to do anything for you, just hit her in the head first.
Now, in a dressing room, Vita and a showgirl sit at vanity tables.
I'm telling you, what could he say? I mean, he was floored. Are you kidding? He says,
Mildred
no,
enters.
Said, what's more? The powder room's down the hall.
It's all right, Miriam. She's my mother.
No kidding. I didn't know you had a mother.
Everybody has a mother.
Oh, yeah. I guess you're right.
This is Miriam Ellis' mother. She sings.
That's what they tell me anyhow, Mrs. Pierce.
I'm glad to know you.
Oh, it's mutual, I'm sure. I guess this calls for a medium-class celebration. Maybe I'd better send out for a beer. It's full of vitamins.
None for me, thank you.
What can I do for you, Mother?
I want to talk to you, Vita.
Go ahead.
Well,
why don't you go see if Wally wants you?
Oh, he won't. Oh, pardon me, I'm sure.
Won't you sit down, Mother?
Vita smooths her chin with a powder puff.
Well?
I want you to come home, Vita. You don't belong here. This isn't your kind of life.
No. What is my kind of life, Mother?
Well, I don't know. Whatever makes you happy, I guess. That's all I've ever wanted for you.
You think I was happy in Glendale?
Are you happy here?
When I first came here, I used to cry occasionally. But I've gotten over that.
You're very fortunate.
I'm sorry, Mother. I know I've made you unhappy.
Vita, it isn't easy for me to beg like this. But won't you please come home?
No, Mother. You must think I'm on a string. Go away, Vita. Come back, Vita. It isn't that easy. I'm free now. No one tells me what to do and what not to do. I do what I think best, and I like it that way.
I've had the house redecorated, all new furniture, even a new piano. You'd like it, I know.
You still don't understand, do you? You think new curtains are enough to make me happy. No, I want more than that. I want the kind of life that Monty taught me, and you won't give it to me. I'm sorry for all the trouble I've caused, but if I went home, it would start all over again. You know that. You know how I am. The way you want to live isn't good enough for me.
If I could give you the kind of life Monty taught you, would you be willing to come home then?
But you couldn't, could you, Mother?
Mildred shrinks under Vita's haughty gaze.
Sorry to interrupt, but you can hardly know it just so long that people begin to look at you funny. Anyhow, your number's coming up.
All right. Sorry, Mother, I'm on next. I have to change.
She takes down a grass skirt from a hook by the door.
Do you mind?
Not at all, but... when will I see you again, Vita?
Just drop around. I'll be here. Bye.
Bye.
Later, a for sale sign stands on the grounds of a mansion. Inside, Monty and Mildred descend a grand curving staircase.
Well, so much for the upstairs. It's a little gloomy, isn't it? Not quite so bad down here, with the possible exception of the entrance hall. As you can see, the pride of the Berrigans isn't exactly rolling in wealth. You're not exhausted?
No, not at all.
Look, you can't be really serious about buying this place.
You're not a very good salesman, you know.
No, I suppose I'm not. In here used to be the sitting room. It still is. I do all my sitting here, becoming quite an expert at it.
Do you live here all alone?
Oh, yes, they're complete living quarters here. Somebody has to be on the premises to show the place. Won't you sit down?
Yes, thank you.
May I fix you a drink?
Please.
I have the heel of a bottle, no ice or seltzer. Sorry I can't be more hospitable.
Oh, that's all right. I prefer it straight.
I beg your pardon?
I said I prefer it straight.
Oh. Say when.
Oh, when? What happened to your orange groves?
Sold for taxes, like everything else.
The beach house, too? Oh, it was beautiful.
No, not the beach house. I have an uncle who has a little money, and he wouldn't let me sell the beach house. He's hoping to foreclose on it instead.
Mm, sounds like a nice uncle.
Monty sips his drink, then leans toward her.
Now, Mildred, what do you want?
Well, I don't understand.
Oh, yes, you do. You don't really want to buy this antiquated tomb. You'd be out of your mind.
Oh, I don't know. It isn't such a bad house. A little remodeling would do wonders. Take off some of that gingerbread and redecorate the inside and... my business-like air isn't fooling you much, is it?
No. No, I remember too well. I remember how it was with us once, and so do you. It isn't something either of us can forget.
You haven't forgotten, Monty.
Not for an hour. Even this doesn't help.
The scotch.
Then you can do me a great kindness.
If I can.
Ask me to marry you.
Why?
Well, I must say your attitude isn't exactly enthusiastic.
You went to considerable trouble to get rid of me once, so naturally I'm a little startled by your proposal of marriage. This is so sudden, Mildred.
I have my own personal reason for wanting to marry you.
Reason named Vida, I think.
Why should it be?
Because your reason for doing anything is usually Vida.
Well, whether it is or isn't, what's your answer?
I can't afford you, Mildred. You have money and I haven't. All I have is pride and a name, and I can't sell either.
I see.
I'm not enjoying this, Mildred. Things are very different now from the way they were in the beginning.
I know. I haven't forgotten.
Neither have I. I want you to love me again the way you did then. I need that more than anything else. I'm lost without it. I told you that day I knew you were the only woman in the world for me. I loved you then, Mildred, and I love you now.
Well, then why?
I can't marry you. I won't go on taking tips from you as I used to. Of course, if I owned a share in your business.
Oh, I see. I think I understand now.
She cracks a smile.
How much of a share would your pride require, Monty?
Please don't put it that way, Mildred. You know it hurts me to do this. I'm only doing it
for... How much of a share?
He glowers.
One third.
She peers into the brim of her black hat.
All right.
She blocks his kiss with her glass.
Sold. One Barrigan.
Now a society item. Businesswoman and Barrigan heir wed. A man in a club chair holds the newspaper. His shadow crumbles up the page. Now in the redecorated mansion, Lottie answers the door.
Lottie? Why, Mr. Pierce.
Is Mrs. Pierce, Mrs. Barrigan, is she in?
She's in there. I mean, this way, please.
Thank you.
Nice to see you,
Lottie.
It's been such a long, long time. Follow me. Oh, no, no, no. I'm supposed to announce everybody. You stay there. Pardon, please.
She enters a room off the hall where Mildred works in a dark, fringe-trimmed dress.
Mr. Albert Pierce.
Mildred strides out and smiles fondly at Lottie.
Lottie, not so loud.
No?
Hello, Bert. It's nice to see you.
Thanks, Mildred. I was just driving by and thought maybe I'd drop in and say hello. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, of course not. Come in. Sit down. Would you like a drink?
No, thanks. My hours are too long. I can't do it these days.
Let's sit over here.
Ah, this is quite a nifty place.
Yes, we just finished redecorating. You didn't come to the wedding.
I read about it.
It was very informal, just Marty's family and a few of his friends.
Mildred, I probably have a lot of nerve asking you this, but do you really love this guy?
I married him, didn't I?
That doesn't answer my question.
Monty's okay.
That still doesn't answer me. Are you in love with this guy?
No, Bert. I'm not exactly in love with him. Monty and I understand each other. I thought, too, if I moved away from that other house and fixed this place up, I thought maybe...
Lita would come back. I thought that was why.
I know you think I'm a fool, Bert, but I can't help it. I'd do anything, anything to get her back. After all, I couldn't leave her where she was, now could I?
No, I guess not. Anyhow, that's all I wanted to know.
I guess we'll always fight about her.
Mildred, I brought you a wedding present.
Wedding present?
Take a look out that window.
Cautiously, she approaches the window, passing a grand piano, where a portrait of Kay sits beside a vase of flowers. Vida stands outside, flipping through a magazine by Bert's car. Mildred wheels around.
Bert, did you ask her to come with you?
No, no, she called me up. She tried to pretend it was for something else, but I got the truth out of her. She wanted to come home, Mildred.
Tell her to come in.
She hurries back to the window and pulls aside the long sheer drapery. Her face beams with teary-eyed wonder. Bert returns with Vida, now wearing a modest two-tone suit and her hair pulled back neatly from her face. As Mildred comes to the living room door to meet them, Vida gulps and looks at the floor.
Vida.
She runs toward her mother and embraces her, then lets Mildred cover her cheeks with kisses. Bert quietly steps away from them.
I want
wanted to come home weeks ago. And when it was Christmas, I couldn't stay away.
Oh, I'm so glad, darling.
Oh, I'll change, Mother, I promise. I'll never say mean things to you again.
I said mean things too.
They joyfully embrace again.
Mother, this is a beautiful place.
Oh, Bert, I forgot to thank your father.
She shakes his hand.
Bert, I'm very grateful.
That's all right, Mother.
I don't believe it. I simply don't believe it. Well, well, the prodigal returneth. We'll have the fatted calf for dinner.
Hello, Marty.
Hey, tears of joy at seeing me again, I trust.
Of course.
You look lovely, prodigal. It's about time you came to see us.
Vita's come home, Marty. She's going to stay with us.
That is, if Marty doesn't mind.
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Just don't call me father.
Later, Vita leans over a birthday cake decorated with flaming candles. Monty taunts her over her shoulder as she puffs. Then a crowd of faces leans over and blows out the candles. A swarm of young people in formal clothes fills Mildred's living room. Lottie and another maid fill glasses.
Eloise, be careful how you pour that champagne. That's Père Fils, 1927.
Is that better than 28?
Well, it's the newest we could get. Jacques, isn't this a beautiful night? I just love parties, don't you?
I beg your pardon?
Thank you kindly.
Lottie tries to talk through both ends of the receiver.
Yes? Hello? Oh, this is a Barragán residence. Who shall I say is calling? Oh, yes, yes, Miss Mildred. I'll call her.
Now, at Mildred's office, Wally and the accountant meet with another man.
This is business.
Hello?
Now, just take a look at this.
Hello, Ida. This is Mildred. Yes, how's the party going?
Fine. Vita just cut the cake.
Mildred glances at the men, then covers the phone.
Absolutely.
No, I just wanted to let you know I'll be delayed here a little longer.
What's going on there? Are you in trouble? You sound so funny.
No, I'll tell you about it later. Keep the party going for me, will you?
Okay, Mildred, but get here as soon as you can.
Was that Mother?
Yes, she's at the office. There's something going on. I'm worried. I think she's in some sort of business trouble.
Well, it happens in the best of families.
Don't look now, but you've got canary feathers all over your face.
Business and making money, that's all Mother thinks about. How about that, Jane?
Beauty calls, excuses.
It's a
now
pleasure.
In the office.
My clients demand an accounting. Now, you must satisfy your creditors or show cause why control of Mildred's Incorporated should not be taken away from you. If you resist, your creditors force you into bankruptcy. It's as simple as that.
Can they do it?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Berrigan.
So am I. Well, I've gone over everything, and I haven't a cent of ready cash in any of the restaurants. So I guess that's that.
I wish it was different. I was hoping you'd scrape up enough dough to get yourself out of this mess. Anyway, you can still manage the business.
That's very nice of you, Wally, stealing the business out from under me and letting me run it for you.
Listen, I'm not getting any bang out of doing this to you. I haven't any choice. You've been bleeding this business dry so you can live the way you have since Vita came home. You said so yourself.
I know.
Okay, you let a few bills go by, then a few more. Pretty soon you're in real trouble. Now the creditors want your hide, and I can't stop them. What do you expect? Another month like this, and we'd all be out in the cold, as it is.
As it is, only I am, isn't that it?
I'm sorry, it looks that way. You'd still be all right if Monty hadn't forced the situation.
Monty, what's he got to do with this?
I thought you knew this was his idea. He wants to sell his share of the business, and I got to go along with him, or I'm out too, didn't you know?
No.
You married him, I didn't.
Good night, Mr. Better.
I'm sorry this has happened. And if I do say it, as perhaps I shouldn't, I think Mr. Berrigan acted badly. Very badly indeed. Good night, Mrs. Berrigan.
Good night, Jones.
A frown crosses Mildred's frightened face, and she strides toward the telephone, holding one hand in a loose fist. She takes a deep drag from her cigarette while she waits.
Hello, Ida. This is Mildred again. I want to speak with Monty.
He isn't here, Mildred. He drove off about 20 minutes ago, just after the party broke up.
I see.
She hangs up slowly.
Mildred! Mildred!
She grabs a fur jacket and pulls it on, then reaches for long fur-trimmed gloves. Pulling open a drawer, she shoves aside some receipts and pulls out a gun. She buries it in a jacket pocket, then leaves. Later, she arrives at Monty's beach house. A drizzling rain reflects cars' headlights against the street. Now in Inspector Peterson's office.
I went to the house. Monty was alone, and I killed him.
You're lying, Mrs. Berrigan. We know you weren't alone in the house with him. We have proof of that and various other things. Okay, now. Yes. You see, Mrs. Berrigan, we've had a slant on you from the beginning. You were the key, and we had to put the pressure on you. Well, the key turned, the door opened, and there was the murderer.
Detectives enter with Vida.
They picked her up at the airport. They grabbed her off a plane headed for Arizona. She didn't like it much.
I don't understand.
You will. We know all about it. Your mother told us everything. Why did you kill him?
You promised not to tell. You promised. You said you'd help me.
Vida, don't say anything.
Too late, Mrs. Berrigan. That's all we needed. You left the party at approximately 11:15 with Berrigan. Your mother left her office at 11:45. You were already at the beach house when she got there shortly after midnight. Isn't that right, Mrs. Berrigan?
Mildred's shoulders heave and she nods.
Yes. I didn't know Vida was there when I came in. I expected Monty to be alone.
In a flashback, Mildred continues into Monty's apartment. She descends the twisting staircase, then steps out of the shadows. Vida lies against the bar in Monty's arms, their mouths locked in a kiss. Monty stands and notices Mildred there. Then Vida turns too. Her pale face freezes and she hops down from the bar stool. As Mildred approaches with deliberate steps, Monty forces a smile.
We weren't expecting you, Mildred, obviously.
It's just as well you know. I'm glad you know.
How long has this been going on?
Since I came home, and even before. He never loved you. It's always been me. I've got what I wanted. Monty's going to divorce you and marry me.
Vida.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Mildred weaves and chokes back a sob. Eyeing Monty, she reaches for her jacket pocket.
Mildred.
Smoke puffs from his nostrils.
Use your head. This won't solve anything.
She drops the gun. Tearfully, she turns away. As she disappears up the spiral staircase, Monty turns on Vida.
Just where did you get the idea I'm going to marry you?
Monty, don't joke like that.
I'm not joking. If you think I'm going to marry you, you're very much mistaken.
Mildred runs to her car.
Monty, listen to me. You told me over and over again that you loved me.
Did I? Then I must have been drinking.
Monty, listen to me.
Look, you don't really think I could be in love with a rotten little tramp like you, do you?
On the street level, Mildred turns on her headlights and cranks the key in the ignition. Frantically, she presses controls on the dashboard and begins to sob. Finally, she buries her head in her hands. Firelight flashes over Vida's grimacing face. Monty clutches his chest, then the revolver lands beside him.
Mildred.
Mildred returns and finds Vida sobbing uncontrollably in the living room.
Vida, what's happened?
It's Monty.
As Mildred takes a step toward the living room, her broad shoulders drop.
He said horrible things. He didn't want me around anymore. He told me to get out. And then he laughed at me. He wouldn't stop laughing. I told him I'd kill him. He said I didn't have guts enough. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to, I tell you. But the gun kept going off over and over again. Then he was lying there, looking at me. Just looking at me. You've got to help me. Give me money to get away and time. I've got to get away before they find him.
I can't get you out of this, Vida.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Number, please.
Give me the police department.
No. No, Mother. Think what will happen if they find me. Think what will happen.
I don't care anymore, Vida.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Give me another chance. It's your fault as much as mine.
Mildred covers the receiver.
You've got to help me. Help me, Mother. Just this once.
Hello?
I'll change. I promise I will. I'll be different.
Hello?
Just give me another chance.
It's your fault I'm the way I am.
Santa Monica Police Department.
Help me.
Hello.
Vita clings to her mother's hand and Mildred kisses the girl's forehead. Now, in Peterson's office, Mildred lays her head on his desk.
I thought maybe in a way it was my fault. So I tried to help her. I wanted to take the blame for it.
Not this time, Mrs. Barrigan. This time your daughter pays for her own mistake. Okay, Booker.
A detective takes Vita's arm. Mildred grabs her as she passes.
Darling, I'm sorry. I did the best I could.
Don't worry about me, Mother. I'll get by.
See that those others are released.
Inspector Peterson walks toward a shaded window.
We need some fresh air in here. Looks like a nice morning. You can go now. We'll call you when we want you. You know, Mrs. Barrigan, there are times when I regret being a policeman.
Mildred drags her handbag off his desk and walks in a daze from the office. In the corridor where washerwomen scrub the floor, Bert stands by a column, his trench coat thrown over one sleeve of his pinstriped jacket. He takes a step toward her. Then they leave together through a massive archway into the hazy dawn. Words appear. The end. A Warner Brothers First National Picture.